You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the big one. You've all been waiting for this. Our social media channels, they've been absolutely hopping ever since we announced that Roddy Collins was going to be joining us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And he's not just joined us, he sat down for well over an hour with myself in the last couple of days. And it's a no-hold-barred exclusive with Roddy. He's told us everything about his career. The ups, the downs, the controversies. It's all covered tonight. You're going to get the full story, the full scoop from the horse's mouth. Roddy Collins, you're going to be hearing from him in the next couple of moments. As you'll hear on the start of the interview, Roddy, he's out in the Aran Islands at the moment, and you'll hear why during the start of the interview. But that threw up a couple of challenges, of course. The Wi-Fi was literally non-existent and the phone line wasn't much better. So we did have to spend a couple of days scrubbing up the sound to the very best we could. But it's absolutely fine. But if you do just find a couple of little patchy moments here and there, we do apologise. But it's the best we could do, given the circumstances. But we were delighted to get Roddy on the show, and we were absolutely honoured to have him sitting down with us for over an hour. So a big thanks to Roddy. And by the way, you can check out his column in the Irish Star. That's going to be out on Saturday, and he'll be giving his reaction to the release of Champagne Football. Of course, Roddy Collins, a man who fell foul of the participation agreement, I should say, many, many times down the years. He was a strong critic of John Delaney in the FAI. And he's given his reaction now after all those revelations by Mark Tighe came out in the press and in that brilliant book, Champagne Football. Make sure you pick up a copy. But that's enough from me. Let's hear from the man himself. Make yourself a cuppa. It's a long one. The ups, the downs, the ins and outs, the life story of the one, the only, Roddy Collins. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined on the line now by a legend of the League of Ireland. You'll all know him, and I'm all sure you're delighted to hear from him once again. Roddy Collins joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Been trying to track him down for many, many years. We finally got hold of the Rodster. Roddy, how are you keeping, and where are you phoning in from today?
Well, I'm surprised you even got me, Kieran. I'm holed up down in Achill Island, away from all the mayhem up and down. I'm down here 3 weeks now. So that's where I am, and I'm in great form. And absolutely relieved at the disclosures in the book from Champagne Football. We talked about that later, but no, I'm in a great place. I'm looking forward to get back. Welcome when I get back up.
Great to hear that. Big shout out to your daughter Sinead. She was the one that set this interview up for us. I know you're a big family man, Roddy. So I hope they're all keeping safe and well in these strange times.
They're all great, Ken. That's the main thing. A great little family there, and yeah, very supportive and. All up in Dublin, all progressing well, all good contributors to society, and I'm very, very proud of them.
Great stuff. Look, you've touched on it already there. Champagne football is a hot topic amongst Irish football followers at the moment. I think it's fair to say you probably fell foul of the so-called participation agreement more than anyone else throughout your career. You criticised Delaney and the FAI numerous times, and you were penalised for that. I think many people, you'll probably agree, the participation agreement, more of a gagging order down the years than anything else. But everything that's come out in the wash in recent months in the book and in the media, it must vindicate you. You must feel vindicated.
Well, I feel vindicated, Kieran. And I also feel vindicated in the eyes of my family, who have gone through torture, to be honest with you. Because they didn't like to see me out of the game. They didn't like to see all the negative publicity with fines, with newspaper headlines being up in kangaroo courts, as I call them, in the FAI. So from that point of view, you know, I'm delighted that they feel vindicated as well, because from Caroline, my wife, right through Sinead, as you mentioned, my eldest, all the way down through them, they stuck with me big time. And when there was no money coming in, no employment, and, you know, things were, they were good, Karen, I'll be honest with you. I felt a little bit guilty that I let them down. I should have, you know, maybe not being so vocal against the absolute disaster, which was the FBI, and we all know it now. But no, the book actually vindicated me and gave me a better sense of them. They got a better understanding of the situation, even though they backed me 100%.
Yeah, we might come back to that later on. Let's go back to the very start, though, of your managerial career. You were a player-manager at Bangor in Northern Ireland, and you took up the role of manager after Nigel Best stepped aside. How did that come about? Had you been doing a little bit of coaching, given you were coming towards the end of a long playing career, or was that job just sprung on you? How did it come about?
Kieran, I never ever put a cone out in my life. I had no interest in coaching. Management was a million miles away from my thoughts. Right? So, I'm sitting in the dressing room one day, and we go out and play a game. Everything's hunky-dory. I'm walking off the pitch, and a man called Wilson Matthews, one of the best men I've ever met in football, approached me after the game. He said, well, I can have a quick word. I think I was 33 years of age at the time, 34. Can I have a quick word? He said, Nigel's stepping down. He's going to take Glenavon over. Will you take the team for 4 weeks? And me being me, Kieran, which has got me the millions of bad situations, I said, no problem. Absolutely no problem. Till I was driving home with the lads in the car realising, this is a problem. I've never done this before, you know. So anyway, I remember well going to the first game. I went up to a meeting on the Tuesday night and I met the board and he said, look, will you take it for 4 games till we find the manager? I said, I will, no problem. And our first game is against Larnaway. And I think it was Larnaway, but it was like a Ballymena Larnaway, one of those games. And I remember getting lost. And I had 4 players in the car with me. When I did eventually arrive at the ground, everyone was sitting looking at me. I walked into a room with 16 pairs of eyes all glued to me. I'd be pre-match, me introduction talk to the players not lined up. And when I walked in, I just blew a gasket. I didn't know what to say. First, I apologised. I went out to the toilet. I'll never forget it. I looked at the window. And if I could have fitted out that window, I was gone. Back down to Dublin. They never would have seen me again. The chairman would have had to pick the team because I went, how am I going to handle this? But anyway, we got through it. We got a win. Next 4 games, we were unbeaten. And then I got called up, got a 2-year contract. And that was it. I never, ever imagined being a manager. But when it happened, it was a piece of cake. And I loved it. And my remit was to make sure they were in the top 6 to qualify for the Premier League the following season. And they were rock bottom when I took over. A difficult, difficult time. Got them into the top 6. And I proceeded to sign players to win the league the next year. And one of your men in Dundalk, McNulty, was my first part of the call. And he agreed to sign. Jim Carr was my second. Then I had big Iron Mountain Derry, Coyler. He was my third. And then I had a chap, Duffy. He was my fourth. And I had two more big signings. And everything was going great in the off-season. I declared what my intentions were to the board. And they said, that's brilliant. Come up and speak to us on Tuesday and we'll ratify. And they agreed money with all the players. We'll ratify the whole lot. Oh, John did speak. He was one of them. And then at the end of that week, I got a phone call just to tell me, Ronnie, I have the unenviable task of informing you, a man called Gibbert McConkey, that we've decided to go local with the next manager. So we're not going to go with it, so we won't be signing those players. So we ended up in the court case because I'd loaned them £4,500 to pay the wages near the end of the season. There was no money. And also, I paid half of the repayments on the car I had. I paid the other half, and that was taken away at the front of my house. So my first managerial experience on the pitch was a very good one. Off the pitch was a horrendous experience. So I walked away and went down and started working with Stephen at the box.
Did you think about packing it in at that stage, Roddy? That sounds like a very challenging personal situation you went through there.
Oh, it did. I never wanted to see another dugout again because I found it so simple. I knew how to win that league within a year or two. And when I got such a kick in the stomach, it just knocked me for 6. And I felt the most important thing that hurt me was the sleeve in where it was done. Couldn't figure that one out because I was the bee's knees when I kept them in the top 6. And then I was the bee's knees where all the signs were going, my God, these are unbelievable names. How'd you get them? And they weren't mad money either. And then when I got the kick in the stomach over, I thought, hold on a minute, I've been used and abused here. So I went to court group because they wouldn't give me me the money they owed me, and they wouldn't concede one in the car. So in the end, I went to court. Wilson Matthews stood beside me, Nigel Best stood beside me, and a few other managers out of the league stood beside me, and I won the case outside the court. What a pal. Said, I never want to see another football club again. And went walking with Stephen. I think it was about 3 years I was with Stephen, helping him in the gym and helping him at his fights. And that was it until the Bowes call came, you know.
Yeah, let's move on to Bowes. As I said, you were considering your future as a manager at that stage, but you go from Bangor, you did a great job with them, keeping them up, and you had ambitions of maybe winning the league with them. But to go to Bowes, I know they were struggling at the time when you took over, but obviously a massive club with massive history in the League of Ireland. You'd had three playing spells there, so you knew that yourself. But was that a massive change going from a side like Bangor to a giant of Irish football like Bohemians?
Couple of men that will go through brick walls, but that's what you need in relegation. So Johnny's fourth session, I remember, he put me best pinstripe suit on, a lovely white shirt, and a bright red tie. We did the training, and before we trained, I cleaned out the dressing room. I went through every one of them individually, the merits of why one was staying, why one was gone, why one was getting maybe another couple of weeks. And I eliminated it. Now, I think there could have been five or six players that I felt were holding the club back. They were all senior players with names in the league who won top titles. So I done that. I went home, picked up the phone, and I rang Tony O'Connell. How are your son? That's what he always said. I said, I'm okay, Tony. How are you? I'm fine. I said, Tony, just to let you know, I said, I'm at the throne. Five or six players out. And the phone went silent. And he came back to me and said, "You're still there, Tony?" And his words were, "You're fucking lunatic. You're fucking lunatic. What do you have to do?" And I said, "Well, Tony," I said, "look, you've asked me to come in and do a job." I said, "I need to be cleaning out that dressing room. There was people swinging the lead." I said, "I've cleaned them out." I said, "You can back me out, you can sack me now." I said, "I'll understand, I won't have any grievance with you, you've been very good to me." So there was a pause, and he went, "I'll back you, but you don't get this club relegated." He said, "My name will be, I can't tell you the word, it'll be disaster, because I've employed you." I didn't do any interview process or anything like that. So anyway, that was that. So I eliminated the players, won't name them, and I remember the following week's training, and Terry Evison was putting out calls, and he came to me and says, "Rod, I'm a bit concerned." I said, "What is it?" He says, "We haven't got enough for a 7-a-side tonight." I said, "Don't be worrying. Have we 11 for Sunday or Saturday?" Or Saturday, I think it was in Cork. "We've just about 11. I said, "Right, leave it with me." So I got to my contacts in England, and I ran a very, very good mate of mine in John Steele, who knows every player from the Conference South to the Conference National to the League 2, that was available, and would do a job at an hour level. So we started working with him, and I remember on the Friday morning before the Dundalk game on the Saturday, Stevie Spicer, my pal, went down to the airport and picked up Kevin Hunt and Dean Martin. They signed just before the deadline, and they made up the starting 11 in Cork with a couple of kids on the bench, and Cork dropped their first points of the season that day against us. We got a draw out of it. And from then on in, I think we had 6 or 8 games unbeaten. So the players were up in arms behind me, all waiting around the boardroom, all waiting for a negative result that wasn't coming. And one of the players that in that situation, his in-laws were neighbours 4 doors from my mother's. And my mother rang me up and she says, "Rod, can you come down? I want to talk to you." So I went down, "What's wrong, Matt?" She said, "People across the road asked me, would you take a certain player back?" And I said, "No, sure, please, just listen to him." So I remember I had to let Dean Martin go and keep Kevin Hunt. I had the money to keep one of them, but not the two of them. I wanted to keep the two because Dean was a great kid. Pardon me. So I remember I only wanted to keep one. So I went down and had a meeting with Dean Martin and his wife, and she was pregnant at the time in the Arlington Hotel. And I told him, I said, "Dino, can't do it." So I remember his wife breaking down in tears, and I remember giving her a hug and apologising. She understood, he knew football. I remember Kevin and Faye coming down the stairs and said, "Look, Kev, I can keep you, and I have to let Dino go, so it depends, just come together, what you want to do." So Kevin had a good chat with Dino upstairs, came down and said, "No." He says, "Rod, I'll take my options. Dino has a good option back in Iceland or Hong Kong, one or the other." So anyway, that was it. So then that was the day I signed the legend. The rest of that was a struggle. Took Paul Bourne in. Paul was about 2 stone overweight, but talent to Bourne was a brilliant help to get us out of trouble. Had a few more into the pack. Got Tocky O'Connor rallied round. He rallied the troops. And we scrambled over the line the last day of the season against Colville away in the playoffs, got a 5-0, came back, and then obviously we secured our position in the league. off-season. I was preparing for the new season. And I was brought to a meeting down in Daly Mount Park with the board. And I walked in full of the joys of spring. But after about 30 seconds, realised I was in a very, very hostile room. And I couldn't figure it out. So anyway, they opened up. We're not happy with you. We didn't like the way you dealt with the players when you threw them out. We don't like the way you deal with the media. And actually, one of the quotes was, "You speak like a docker," which was an insult to my in-laws, who were all dockers and great people. So that didn't go down well with me. We want you to step down. We've no faith in you. Anything that could have been said for a man to walk away was said. I bit the tongue. I said, "Let me have time to think about it." I went down. I rang Tony. He said, "There's a coup de grace on." He said, "I'm away. You sit tight and I'll sort it out." And he did. I was called to another meeting not so long after that one. And I went in and they said, "We'll give you an agreement. We'll retain you for 11 games into the new season. After the 11 games, you will resign if we're not happy with you. You will get no remuneration and you will not speak to the media." And I signed off on that in the document, and I have that document in the solicitor's office. I signed off on that, Kieran. I walked out. I actually walked out and fucking cried with frustration. I thought, is there no end to this carry on in boardrooms between Bangor? Now I thought he's up and running. So I went down out with a vengeance, and on the 11th game, we topped the table against Sligo in Daly Mount Park, the night of the opening of the new stadium. So it was the biggest celebration of all time for the new era of Bowes. And what did I do? I done what Randy Collins does. Stupidly, I went into the boardroom, I blew a gasket, and I fucked them all out of it. Every single one of them. For putting me in a position at the start of the season to sign that document. So that didn't go down particularly well. So we got through that season. We competed with Shelburne, but we were never ever going to take the title off them. We were just also rounds. And we also could have won the cup. We'd won opportunity when we played them in the final Talca. There were 10 minutes to go. And Kelly up front had a bullet header. And Williams was absolutely brilliant when he saved. That was our only chance. The replay, they beat us. They beat us well, even though the scoring was a small score. They beat us well. And they won the double that year. And I looked at the situation. I looked at how we didn't win it, why we didn't win it. And I analysed it. So I had a meeting with the squad. And I let 7 go from that squad. And again, I was called in and told, "Are you stupid? Are you mad? Are you off the wall? We nearly won the league and we nearly won the cup." I said, "There lies your answer. Nearly." I said, and I couldn't have got another ounce out of those players. They were brilliant fellas. They were great, great fellas. I have to say that. None of them ever let me down or the club down or themselves down. But they just weren't up to winning league standard. So, pardon me, I proceeded then to rebuild the squad. And I done that with the help of Jerry Reddy, who helped me get a first course goal. The help of John Steele, who got me Simon Webb. He got me Dave Morrison. He obviously got me Hunty, who signed a permanent deal. Because he was on loan from Barnet when I got him starting off. He was on a contract then, they loaned him out to me. I got Wayne Russell from the north of Ireland, who played for Burnley. So I went on a recruitment spree, and I looked at it, and player for player, I knew we could take on Sherwood. They were the powerhouse at the time. So we took off that season, and obviously we started off with a good European run. We beat Aberdeen up in Pittodrie. We're a team that only took to the field for the first time ever that night. 11 players. The plan going up that everyone ridicules me about now, calls me off the wall, and, you know, calls me off the wall, and stuff I wrote in the paper, stuff I said in the media. And, you know, man on the night. Everyone thought this fella was a lunatic. Well, I knew what he was doing. There was nothing in all the madness. And the proof was in the pudding with the end game. So, from ribbing Epscopdal to undermining him in front of his players on the television, that was the plan. That's the reason why I'd done it. Nothing against that man, or nothing against anyone. It was to make him, his players feel that I undermined him. I said he was too old. He was worn out. They need a new manager in there like me, who's younger. All that was just said. It was all tactical psychology. That's what I called it. Anyway, we got through it. Second game at Talker Park, we had a player sent off 5 minutes before half time. So we had to negotiate the second half with 10 players against a good Aberdeen side. So I left one up front. Left the other 10 behind, or the other 9 behind the ball, so we were grand. We'd four at the back, and we had a midfield sorted out, four across there. And to my amazement, they left 3 at the back. So we actually outnumbered them in the areas where we needed it. We outnumbered them by 1 in the middle of the park. So I told the lads, don't play out forward. Just hold on to the ball, because we had no problem. And win it back because we were man on man and one extra. So, practically, I couldn't believe how the man coped with it. We got through it, we scraped through it at the end, a brilliant save by the big man, Wayne. And we got through that fixture, it was great. And then the next one was Kaiser Lautern. And I remember we went to play UCD before that game. And, oh my God, as a manager, you come out of a dugout some days, you have. You have the butterflies in your stomach and you think something special happened here at our level. We absolutely played brilliant against UCD. Every single player just clicked on that day. And it was early in the season, I knew we were on the sun. And we played Kaiserslautern. And same again, Talca Park, doing brilliant, absolutely doing brilliant. Just before half time, Trevor Malloy, red card. So here we go again. Negotiating the second half with 10 players against a crack team. And I thought, right, the longer we go, keep it alive the second leg. Now, I think we got to the 60-odd minute, and Dave Hill, it was one of my best signs of all time. I won't forgive me for this. And it was only one lapse in the whole time he was with me. Just got a little bit hesitant on one pass, and he was trying to knock it to someone who didn't show, to be quite honest. And him being the expert and the player he was, he didn't want to give it away. But that little hesitation, he got nicked, and they buried one. And they just upped the ante for a few minutes, and they banged in 3 in quick succession. And that was it. Everyone's saying, right, it's over now. And I thought, no, it's not. It's not over till it's over. That was always my mantra. So I took a striker, I took Liam O'Brien off. He hasn't forgiven me to this day, but it was a tactical switch. And I went, right, we might as well lose 10-1 here, or 10-0, than just concede now. So we put 2 up front, pinned our back 3, and we got a little bit of joy. They were happy 3-0 away from home, or a result, but we nicked one. And I thought, well, look, we've scored one. We'll see how it goes in the away leg. Went in the away leg, and I remember, you get a tour on a European away leg, Kieran, and they bring it in, they give you a little goodie bag, and they bring you around, and basically, you know, it's hospitality, they call it. I thought it was patronising, to be quite honest with you. I felt embarrassed. So I remember walking away from the meeting and saying, oh, I have to go. And I walked out, and I was locked into the ground. I had to climb out over a gate. And I went to the driver who was out, so I said, bring me back to the hotel. And I went in to the lads, and they were all having their food. I was never, ever so angry at being patronised in all my life. And that's when I knew League of Ireland was a pub league to everyone else. And I got my fist on the table and I banged and I said, lads, we cannot let these fuckers beat us here. We might get through, but we cannot let them beat us because they think we're pub players. And I got a response from the lads. I remember them all looking up and going, and they took it into the game. We had their tactics right, but the lads carried it off. And we got a fantastic, famous 1-0, which was only a moral victory, but to us, it was a victory on that one game. Took the rest into the league.
I want to pick up on something you said there, Roddy. I hope Bulls fans are enjoying listening to that. I have to say, I've been absolutely engrossed in everything you've said there over the last few minutes. But you were just talking about sometimes, aside from the tactical side of your game as a manager, sometimes you did like to play mind games with the opposition. And down here in Longford, we always speak about with that 2013 season with Athlone. Longford were 13 points clear at the top, and then Athlone clawed their way back slowly, and it came down to a game in City Colin Stadium in Longford, Athlone against Longford. If Athlone won it, they were going to go top of the table for the first time that season. And yourself and Tony Cousins had an exchange in the media leading up to the game that week, and I think a lot of people think that maybe you beat him mentally in that title run-in. Your comment was that Davy O'Sullivan it was a one-man team essentially, Longford. And Tony tried to have a pop back, and I don't think it really worked. And it looked like your team won mentally on the day in that big game. Is that something you'd agree with?
Oh, 1,000,000%. And little Bernie, who was the scorer that day? Bernie scored for me. Bernie, all come to me. Ah, look, come here. I came out of boxing. I've been with Steve for 3 years, and I've seen the psychology of boxing. And if I can walk in boxing, I can walk in it, because we're all human beings. I just felt if it can give you an edge. But the idea of psychology is to undermine somebody to other people, not be personal derogatory, but to undermine their ability, undermine their lack of achievements, and put doubt in the mind of the opposition you're playing against. And that's, it worked for me before. It worked in Bowes when my Shells were 12 points ahead. And I remember going to a FAI Cup draw, and Ollie Bourne was sitting there, and Ollie being Ollie, who had a great time for her, and gone back in history since I was 12 years of age, Roddy, that's another story. But Ollie Bourne being Ollie said to me, "All right, Roddy, do you want to rub the cups? Because it's the only time we're ever going to get to hold them. Like, carry, hold them." And I looked at him and went, "Yeah, Ollie, yeah, okay." And I always thought to myself, the worst thing you can ever do in football is gloat. I've learned that lesson in life, particularly in football, never gloat. I walked out of that room, we were 12 points behind Shelburne at the time. I walked out, I dedicated every single ounce of my entire life from that day on to the last day of the season, and if we come out on top with the double. I dedicate every minute looking at videos, studying players, looking at how I could get at Ollie. Everything I thought was just pure, total, consumed with achieving that. And that came out in the end. So I walked once there, and I knew it was going to work in that low. Because I listened to a team talk outside the dressing room one day when Tony was, I think I was going to, I actually went to watch Longford play. We weren't playing on the same day. And they didn't have a good half. I went down and I stood outside the dressing room at half time instead of going with a cup of tea, and I listened to Cuzzo, and I never heard a man under so much pressure. I never heard a man under so much pressure. Back up, I said, I have him. I said, a better team than us, they better players, but they didn't have the character we had, and they didn't have the knowledge that I had. And I knew. Because you see, Kieran, if you tell somebody something that you've read in the book, they go, I read that myself. If you tell somebody something that you've lived and achieved, they go, well, the man's talking from experience. So when I had a meet with my players and the chairman, and I said, look, we'll catch them. Not we can, we will catch them. Trust me, we will catch them. Now that was a big statement from my behalf, but I genuinely believed it. And the players started believing it, and we clawed it back. And that night in Longford, I remember Aidan Collins was carried off after about 20 minutes. He was probably our most gifted player. And reading the game, as rock solid he was. And Aidan was taken off, and I went, right, okay, they're going to be happy with that, because Sullivan was the main man. He scored a glancing header that night. Everything went into him. So I went, right, I'll call up my son-in-law. Oh, no, Alan wasn't with us in that loan. No, that was modern. No, I got Damien Bourne jumping. I said, get a man mark him. You couldn't get a stronger defender than Damien Bourne jumping. So we nullified it. Bernie Clancy scored. And I remember going top that night, walking out on the pitch, and there was a kid sitting in the middle of the pitch, just gone off on Galway. What was his name? No, I got off on Galway. But anyway, he was a top player, left side player. O'Brien.
Yeah, Derek O'Brien, yeah.
And I pleaded with him to sign with me at the start of the season. He says, no, Rob, I want to try and get promoted. I remember going over, rubbing him on the top of the head. I said, well, I told you, you should have come. I'll never forget that. But anyway, that wasn't gloating. That was just, yeah, that was gloating. But anyway, I took that moment because you told me down by 50 quid extra. But anyway, so yeah, that was, getting back to your point, that was a real psychology that definitely worked, not only for that day, but for the remainder of that. There was a build and a belief in my dressing room. No one's going to stop us from getting promoted. And do you know what? We played Waterford, and they had the biggest budget, and Alan Reynolds, they should have been getting the favourites to go up. And I was a thorn in Alan's side. A game to win the league with, I think it's about five games to go, was against Waterford in Athlone, and we had a full house, it was rocking. And we beat them. And I remember Reno looking at me and going, fuck you, Rod. He gave me a big hug. He's a great bloke, Reno, you know. He's a good, honest, genuine chap. So I remember that, and I went, look, it's game over now. We won the league that night. And the only thing I wasn't happy about after that was we didn't win the remaining games.
Yeah. We might come back to that loan in a little while, Roddy. I want to move on to our next topic. At the moment, there's a real trend in modern football in terms of documentaries. I don't know if you've seen maybe the Spurs and the Man City ones in recent times, but you were probably ahead of your time, it's fair to say, with the Rod Squad when you headed over to Carlisle. How did that come about? Was it your idea, and did you enjoy it, or did you find it a bit of a pain in the backside trying to manage players and do it in a fair manner, but still you have to, I suppose, give the cameramen access at the same time? Obviously, that's the point of a documentary, isn't it? And of course, we had the return of the Rod Squad after that. That was dramatic, to say the least. Aside from your time at Bowes, where obviously you achieved so much, it was the first league and cup double in 75 years, I think I'm right in saying. But just from my point of view, watching that documentary when you were at Monaghan, I thought you appeared very, very at home at Monaghan, maybe more so than any other club, maybe aside from Bowes. Did you have a really special bond with that group of players?
Miserable budget. I inherited a great squad from Mick Cook, who's a brilliant fella, and just a little bit short of achieving what I achieved there. Well, I just got it over the line. Mick started the job, I got it over the line. I had a bunch of lads there, I have to tell you, from Benno and Goal right through to Philly Gorman.
Mm.
What a bunch of fellas, honestly, right through the whole team. We had all sorts of characters in that promotion year, and I really enjoyed it because we were on a high to nothing. And if you lost the game, Jim would never ring you. He'd leave you till the Monday and then he'd ring you. He'd never accuse you. He'd never question anything. He'd never give his opinion on who should have played, who shouldn't have played. He was the absolute dream chairman. He was the dream chairman, you know. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it there. And to get the success at the end, I was offered a bowls job at the end of that. But I'd give me word to Jim that I would stay another season. And once I gave me word, that was it.
Mm.
I wasn't going anywhere. There's a couple of offers come in, but I dismissed them completely. Tentative offers says no, I'm not talking to anyone. So I was looking forward to the new season. It was just a great little community of people. Right through the girls making the field. You know, to the kid man who we still have crack with, Screw Joy Collum. I called them screws because you wouldn't give your stocking for nothing. You go around with holes, you go home and die in a stocking before I give you a new one. And then when I went bankrupt,
yeah,
shop in the town, right? And what did he sell off? All the kit that was there to raise a few quid.
Yeah, look, it's.
It was Cassidy, he was brilliant. Hell, screws. But anyway, no, I enjoyed it there. It was a sad ending for everybody.
Yeah.
The player, the board, the club. I hold absolutely nobody responsible. There was a situation where the club owed the FEI money, and that money was keeping the club going. It was the forecast to keep the club in budget for the rest of the season. And I seen the email that arrived at the club demanding that money.
Yeah.
And that money being paid over meant we'd nowhere to turn. That's what was explained to me. So, you know, that's why I was so angry with what was going on.
Yeah, of course, when Monaghan pulled out of the league, it was the time Ireland were over at the Euros, so the FEI, a few of the lads seemed to be having a great time over there. Didn't seem to hurt them too much that Monaghan had to pull out of the league.
Yeah, but coincidentally, Kieran, when I got the sack from Bowes, I was in Florida with my family on a holiday, and I got a phone call from Caroline's sister to say, Caroline, it's on the radio, Roddy's being sacked. It's not way he's sacked, he's in the win the double. And anyway, it was true, it was announced. And then when I was in Spain on a holiday, Jim rang me. He said, Roddy, it's at the breaking in social media. I don't want to hear it that way. We have to shut the club down, I'm sorry. You know, but there was no argument there. He was a great man, they were great people. They were brilliant people.
Yeah.
Still are. You know? But anyway, look, it went the way it went. So I thought to myself, okay, I've given me word to all these players. I brought them all in. We have to get them clubs fixed up. Clubs, the ones that were known players, I got Steve McGuinness to get on the road. He's done great, and the rest I organised a load of friendlies, kept the training going every night, and to my absolute delight, every single player from kids in the squad to senior players all got fixed up at a club, and that was an achievement that I'm really, really happy about. And, you know, there was people to thank for that as well, like Brian O'Shea, who come up and gave his services free. Milo, he gave his services free to help out. You know what I mean? And it was brilliant.
Yeah, and it's
great. Another one, Trevor Malloy, gave all his services free to help out. So it was brilliant.
It's great to see that Monaghan have the underage setup going now with the Cavan partnership. So, please God, maybe one day we might see them back in the league one day.
Do you know what? If they went back in even on the 21 capacity, I would have no problem going back and up and helping them, because they done what they had to do. They done it right. They let nobody down, and they looked after everybody. And Monaghan to me will always be very, very close to me, I'll be honest.
Yeah, sadly, it wasn't the first time, I suppose, you were caught up in the middle of a financial meltdown throughout your career. Dublin City, Rovers, Cork, where you didn't even get to manage a first team game. Monaghan, Athlone, Waterford, they all had major off-field turmoil during your spell at the club. How did you keep motivating yourself to keep dipping the toes back into the league, given you'd been robbed of fair cracks so many times during your career?
Well, I'll tell you, from day one, as we go back, the banker situation, job right in the league. Well, I have recently, let's be honest, I have a chap who took a few jobs me everywhere, even China at the moment. But anyway, when I managed Bannockburn, they approached me. When I managed Bowes, they approached me. When I helped with Dublin City, they approached me. Rovers approached me. Right? So I never really was used to dealing with appointment jobs. But the common denominator for every single club that we talk about, every single one of them, were broke. You know what I mean? I never got a fair crack with a budget. I got one at Rovers. But they were broke. They had no money. I remember standing in front of a Rovers Bowes game, and just before the game, I got a phone call that said there was no wages. And we were full-time. We'd families, you know, depending on this wage. And no fault to the people running the club. They were trying their best. Mm. I remember going to dress them and saying, I can't do this. And I said to the lads before the kick-off, I said, lads, I'm about to get a bit of news. Before I pick the 11, we've no wages tonight. I said, whoever puts their hand up, I won't hold himself behind them if you don't want to risk it and you want to get out and find another club. So I walked out of the dressing room, came back in, and every single one of those players put their hand up to play. And I tell you what, they were a brilliant bunch. And that included Paddy McCord. That included David Mooney. That included Jason Gavin. That included Jason McGuinness. These were all proper professional players. So, you know, that was a hard, hard thing for me, because I gave them my word of honour that if the wage wasn't there, I would get it. And I did go out and get it. I went down for already 10 grand off one of the board. Now, they were only supporters at the time, and they loaned me 10 grand. And I went down and we got it back. And they got the 10 grand back on most of it. And the team played that night, and we beat Bowes 3-2, which is nothing to me, but just what they done was brilliant. So that was the first job back. That was the Rovers job, right? Then I got absolutely buried by Rovers. Then I was called in one day after I got a ban off the FAI. I had to sit my head in the dugout. This was the start of something's not right here. I got banned by the FAI for games. One of the games, I sat in the derby, and there was a fella in the gantry, TV gantry across the way, with binoculars trained on me. Right? It's a fact. And I had witnesses sitting beside me that was looking over, having a laugh with me. I went down to the toilet at half time. Came back up. They made inquiries, was I in the dressing room? Right? That was the start of it. Players weren't allowed to sign for me at Shamrock Rovers for 50 quid. I'm talking about Tony Sheridan. I'm talking about Willie McDonough back from Carlisle. I'm talking about my relation, Mark Quigley. They were all willing to help out. Mark, because he related to my wife. Willow, because I had him at Carlisle, gave him a break. Tony Sheridan, because he was a great bloke, wanted to help out. He got a compensation claim in work, so he wasn't stuck for money. I wanted to sign all these players. Mark Kenny, who was playing for 50 quid. These were genuinely playing for 50 quid. But no, I was told by Frank Gavin and the FBI, you can't sign them. We don't believe they're only getting 50 quid. The players have to sign documents and letters. It was, and I knew, I said, something is not right here. So in the end of that, I got sacked, called in, and I was told I was being investigated, an internal investigation. What happened was, we played Pats. I was out of the dugout. I was with my uncle in the stand. Right? And I was on the phone to Terry Evans and Constant during the game. Right? The game was over. My phone went down. I left just before the final whistle. The referee put his whistle in his mouth and I was standing by the exit door, slipped straight out. The taxi waiting outside because I didn't want to be caught up in the crowd going out, because you know it's like an itchy car. It's very intense outside. So I wanted to be gone, and I scarfed. My phone went down in the taxi. 100% honest truth, it went down. to box on a boxing show to raise money for the Haemophiliac Society. Boxed on that. I think the next day or the following week I went to a reserve game and I was handed a dossier of about 30 pages of disciplinary and suspended for an internal investigation. Now, I mean, suspend me for going boxing or something, or suspend me for anything. But don't put it out there that I've done something wrong, which could have been drinking, it could have been stealing, it could have been abuse, it could have been anything. And my mother rang me up and she says, Rod, it's in the paper, you've been suspended indefinitely for an internal investigation. What's that about? I says, man, I don't know. I haven't got a clue. I know they want me out because I knew I was told by certain people who were close. You're gone, you're dead man walking. They want you out. But I had another year's contract. So at the end of the day, they had to try and find a way to get me out. I was never going to walk. I'd never walk away from a battle ever in my life. But anyway, so that happened. That happened at Rovers. In the end, we went to court and I settled our court because they had no leg to stand on. So look at the dates after that one, Kieran. 5 years, I couldn't get an interview. I couldn't get a job. I offered my services to clubs free as an assistant manager, as a first team coach. I even offered my assistance as a youth team coach at a league club. I couldn't get a look in. And a man came up to me, a very, very prominent man in Watford United at the time, said to me, Rod, can I ask you, I was out of deal in the Castleknock Hotel as a football man. I was up as a guest to present trophies for Bexbury United. A chap at the table, League of Ireland, very, very prominent League of Ireland man who was involved in Watford, says to me, he says, Rod, he says, why are you not working? I said, so tired of being sarcastic. I said, why am I not walking? He says, what do you mean? I want to walk. He says, but why are you not walking? And I says, I don't know. He says, I'll tell you why. And he named the person who was keeping me out of work. He named a man that was ringing clubs. And I've proof of this because I've witnesses who will go to court that this man called them up and said, don't touch that fucker with a barge pole. That's what was going on. So you wonder why my career, after winning the double, European success, as we call it, League of Ireland, major success in Carlisle, which was keeping a club that hadn't got a pot to pee in the league, and anyone that walked in League 2 will tell you in England, it's the most difficult thing to do. But not only keeping them in a league, getting to a national final in the Millennium Stadium. So that for me, and keeping Bangor up, with no budget. I'd nothing to prove to anyone when I applied for a job. Nothing to prove. But I was deemed unemployable by Chinese whispers, right? I believe I was told by ridiculing me, right? And by just bad people, vindictive people, who had a grow and an absolute didn't want me in the game. So the torture, honestly, and the heartbreak for the family. For my wife, you know, no income. Okay, I'm a plaster, I'm a builder, I had a gym, I worked in pubs. But that's not what I wanted to be. I wanted to be the best manager I could be. That's what my life was dedicated towards. And I knew I was very good at it. And it came natural to me. But to be knocked back and knocked back and knocked back. You're asking me about going to clubs with no money. I'll tell you the lowest point in my life in football. I applied for a job in the league. On the back of supporters begging me to apply for this job, which I never applied before. And the supporters club are ringing me, the head sports club are ringing me, this club, we get you, we're going for the ball, we want you. And I said, right, okay, I'll go for it. So I applied for the job, and the interview was set up for 7 o'clock in a bar in Dublin, the halfway house near where I live in Castleknock. So I went to the bar at 6 o'clock, the meeting's at 6 o'clock, and at 20 past 6, no one turned up. And at 25 past 6, one chap walked in. I'm sorry for being late. How are you keeping? I'm great, yeah. Grand. Yeah, great, brilliant. Blah, blah, blah. small talk, nothing about nothing. And he said to me, he says, I'm going to meet another manager now in town. If we don't choose you, quote me on this, if we don't choose you as the manager, would you give us advice on the next manager? Imagine someone saying that to you in an interview. And I looked at him, is this for real? This is off the wall. So I went home, and I thought that was just a token gesture meeting. I went home, left like that, went for the customary walk in the park the next day with Caroline. Got a phone call. Sorry, we just want to inform you, the secretary of the club, just want to inform you, we won't be taking up your service, and we've employed so-and-so. And I'll never forget it, Caroline. Caroline was with me as a witness. We sat down on a little grass mound in the park, and I couldn't get back up. You know what I'm saying? You're on the floor.
Yeah.
I was on the floor for the first time in my life. I was on the floor when my father passed away. I can tell you that that lasted a long time. Still have a bit of that. But from football, we sat down. It's like someone just sucked every ounce of fight, energy, you name it, heavy, right? And couldn't get up. So I kind of had to walk back out to kind of collect me. When I went home, I went, oh, fuck, I'm finished. I haven't got it anymore. Can't fight this anymore. Just can't, you know what I mean? And that's the way it went. Till my next job came when I was sitting at home one day and a chap who was the commercial manager of Frankfurt, who was a Dublin man, when I was manager of Bowes against Carlisle, who recommended me for the coach job at Frankfurt at the time, and they knocked me back straight away because I didn't have great experience and I had no badges and I didn't speak German. So I had no chance, but at least they put me forward and believed in me. So I got a phone call one day from this chap called Alan Moore. And I talked to Alan Moore from, he was playing for Sligo. Anyway, got the job, got the call, would you take over the club in Monday? And I went, yeah, wind up, here we go. I says, look, I'm busy, man, which I wasn't. I was just desperate to get working. I said, will you just send me an email, or just email me? I said, a request for a meeting. So I didn't get an email. I got a phone call to the president of the club, Tony Zerny. And he said, hello, Roddy, yeah, anyway, one thing led to another. So they booked us out, me and Karen, to have a look at the club and meet Dan Pearson. And the rest was history. And I went out. And when I was out there, all was brilliant. I'm back. I'm thousands of miles away. No one can hurt me now. Nobody can hurt me and my family, right? So I got walking out there. Everything was great. And I went. Got called to a meeting, a very peculiar call. Tony Zara rang me up and says, Roddy, can you come down to my office? I've got some disturbing news. So Carolyn was back home after seeing what the schools were, where we were living, everything, to get things organised. I was out walking away down pre-season and Tony called me and he says, Rod, I'm about to get a phone call from somebody from your association stating that you've stolen money from two football clubs. You've pocketed, now you've trousered money from two football clubs. You're talking about hitting the floor. I said, Jesus. Oh no, this can't be happening. This, can they not leave me alone? Just leave me alone. And I went home. I was living in a hotel. I was living in the hotel there. Anyway, he said, I don't believe it. I've got to know you over the last month. I'm a good judge of character. They're dealing with a viper's nest. That was his quote. They're dealing with a viper's nest, he said. He says, I'm sticking with you. Forget about it. Not forget about it, but just be wary. I asked him who said it. He told me. I know the man who said it. I know exactly how the message was relayed. Right? So I went home to the hotel, and I walked into the hotel, and out of nowhere was Jim Boyce. And he says, how are you doing? So I'm grand, Jim, I'm grand. I says, well, I'm not actually grand, Jim. I said, I'm really down. So I knew Jim from my time at Cliftonville. So I sat down and Jim had a chat with me, a good man. I said, Jim, look, I said, this is what's happened to me. And I says, I know there's stuff going on behind me back to keep me out of work. And I said, but this is the biscuit. I said, I can't even come to Malta now, Mark. So Jim said to me, look, Rod, he said, I'm going to tell you a story. He said, you're the only player I've ever dealt with that gave me money back. And I looked at him and I said, what are you talking about, Jim? He said, when you played for Cliftonville, he said, it wasn't working out, but it wasn't because my legs were gone. And he said, we gave you 2,000 signing on fee. And he said, when you went and had a chat with Marty Quinn, the manager, and shook hands, which Marty was a brilliant fella, it wasn't my legs were gone. It wasn't a good signing for them. And when I shook hands and walked away, I went back up to a game not long after, and I gave Jim Boyce the money back in an envelope. I said, Jim, there's me signing on fee back. And he was knocked for six. He said, no, there was the deal. I said, no, Jim, my legs were gone. I wouldn't take money for nothing. So he told me that story. And I said, Jim, will you do me a favour? When you go to meet the delegation from Malta SA, will you tell someone that story for me, please? He said, I will. And he said, you have my number. He gave me his card. Any reference for a job that you want, you call me and put me on your CV. So that gave me a lift. Off we went. Success out there. Went a bit bankrupt halfway through. Russian investors were involved. Suddenly I was called in by Tony, who was a great man as well. He said, Rod, I don't want to give you a surprise because you have a family here. He said, the money's going to run out soon. And we won't be able to pay for the schooling, the house, everything that I was getting, and not even your wages. So which was right. So I rang the principal back in Castlenock College, and I said to John Crown, I said, John, can you do us a favour, please? Could you take the kids back in? I know you're a week or two. He said, get them home, Australia. So Carly flew home immediately. And then a man called Joe Cokie, who had a business out there, a lovely man involved in Floriana, came to me and says, I'll pay your wages. And then a man that owns the Wine Port Hotel in Athlone, they owned the hotel out here called the Venetia Hotel. He came to me, seen the plight, what's going on in the papers. He came to me and says, right, we'll give you free accommodation. So I lived in the Wine Port Hotel, I lived in the Venetia Hotel in Valletta, and Joe Cokie paid me salary every week. So we battered on, because we went, I think we were about 12, 13 games unbeaten at the time, and it was a club record at the time, and we were heading for the championship pool. And once I left them happy there, I could shake hands with everyone, and I did, and I still have great time, and they have great time. I spoke to them during the week, actually, about the Linfield result. But anyway, so I marched on there, got them into the championship pool, coming into December, I arrived home. When I arrived home, I got a call from Tom Coughlin from Cork, and he said to me, can I meet you in the Sherwin Hotel? I said, yeah. He says, right, I want to take over the club next season. I was delighted. Big chance to get back in the big league, as they call it. So here I go, here's my big chance. I thought there was money there. You know, Tom was straight up with me in fairness to him. Went into a few financial difficulties. I don't worry, you don't need the stupid budget you've been spending. Absolute ridiculous money clubs were spending. You know, Shelbourne done it, Bowles done it when I was gone, Cork done it, Derry done it. You know, stupid management. No prudence whatsoever. So I says, you don't need to do that. I says, I'll build you a squad because we know we've no opposition down the car because you've won a club and it's a brand name, fantastic city, fantastic ground as League of Ireland goes, and I've great contacts across the way and we get going. So I get in there and, you know, there was a funny end to that one. It was a hard slog. There was a consortium of players there, a little cohort there that were trying to run the club but weren't accepting me, which we knew. But I knew that's life, you fight them battles. But I went in, but it all went pear-shaped. And, you know, I was toughed it out for 8 weeks, got 1 week's wages. But I understand what I was getting into. I thought the investment would come. It didn't come in the end. But I'll just give you a funny story in the end. I brought the lads for a walk on the last day. We were waiting for a judgment to come in from the revenue. Brought the lads on a walk. And we were walking and walking. I seen a big church steeple. And I thought, we'll walk to that. I looked close enough. But anyway, I kept walking, left behind me, all walking. So it took maybe 2 hours to get to this place. We walked from Carrick and Lyon, I think, down the passage. Anyway, we got there. And in the end, it was a choice. Right, lads, we'd win and say a few prayers. You never know. We might get a reprieve at the 11th hour. Someone might come in with money. So we went in. I said me a few prayers. All the lads are kneeling down, sitting down, wherever. My little candle went out, right outside. one or two coming out. Next of all, I said, McGregor, Helen, Greg, get the lads. We get back and find out what's happened. Greg comes back out. He says, Rod, they're all fucked. They wanted the bus. He says, they've never walked so far in their life.
Yeah, and of course there was a very sad ending there to Cork, and we can probably do a full episode on your time in Malta and Cork, but Roddy, I don't want to keep you too much longer. You've been very, very, very good with your time. I just want to round up with a couple of questions. Again, going back to Athlone, you arrived at Athlone without wanting to be disrespectful to them. They've been insignificant in Irish football for almost two decades. They've been down in the First Division, I think 17, 18 years. And when you arrived, you said you were going to get them promoted within 2 or 3 years. Everyone laughed. You did it in the first season. Was that your greatest achievement?
No, I didn't say that. Look at the end of the first rod squad, or the second rod squad. My last quote on the whole programme was, we'll win the league. Right? We'll win the league. That's what I said. Athlone was a no-brainer. It was near to Dublin. Fantastic ground. I played for them. I knew the support base down there. You could get players from Dublin to travel up and down. You know, there's a big bunch of players down there that were capable but not capable of winning a league. So no, that wasn't my greatest achievement in football was keeping Bowes in the league in the first year and keeping Carlisle in the league for 2 years. That was my greatest achievement in football as it goes. Going to Athlone was going to be easy for me. I knew it. I looked at how the competition was. It was Waterford and it was Longford. And one thing you don't do in the first division is throw loads of money at it. It's a recipe for disaster. A little bit of a budget, good recruitment, good people, and your home and dry. You win it. Come here, I'd win a fourth division title tomorrow if I got the right club. It's a piece of cake, you know.
And look, you did win that First Division title that year, 2013. But you left in the club in November, and I thought myself that there seemed to be a lot of kind of vibes coming out between lifting the title and the start of that season that maybe things weren't right behind the scenes. Can you tell us, without maybe going into too much detail, I don't know how much freedom you have to speak on it, but what happened behind the scenes that made you decide you didn't want to take that loan into the Premier in the end?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I did want to take them in. I appreciate they didn't have money, and I seen it for first hand at Monaghan, and for Athlone to go in with my ambition, I would have taken a lot more than they could afford. I sat with John Hayden, I sat with Michael O'Connor, I sat with the board, and we had a chat, you know, and we argued over the budget. We came to a figure that was agreeable or disagreeable, and in the end, Sligo and Derry came in, and I told the lads in Athlone, I said, look, I've been up with these other jobs, and they said, well, we can't compete with Dagan offer. So I went and I took the Derry job. There was no animosity. I went back, obviously, to help them out when they were in the hour of need. So we've no problems with Athlone. They're a brilliant club. They will get back on their feet. And now, a lot of great memories at Athlone. Most enjoyable time as a player was at Athlone and Crusaders.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I actually had totally forgotten you'd gone back there briefly in 2017 until I sat down to do my notes for this interview. Were you surprised with how bad things have gotten so quickly at Athlone in the space of 3 or 4 years since you left?
Well, I've identified charlatans in my life. Like, you name it, a lot of people who I believe would be charlatans, and they're getting exposed at the moment, by the way. So I met the so-called investors that were going to turn this club into the next big thing. I met them. After 5 minutes, I knew I was in the company of charlatans. So it was a case of, you know, how am I going to navigate this situation? I didn't want to walk away from the club. They've got me as a player, got me as a manager. I didn't want to walk away. So the whole thing was to try and avoid any real controversy or bankruptcy or anything. So we cut our cloth to the budget, which was zero. It was expensive, about £600 a week. And the achievement at Waterford, my second, and my first time at Waterford, the achievement there, which was the budget when I finished there, was €300 a week. The achievement there was getting 11 players on the pitch that could, you know, even run. The same with Athlone. So my last two jobs was working at Athlone. My biggest achievement both of them clubs was coaxing players to come knowing they were probably going to get battered every time they played. And to motivate myself to do it was out of pure loyalty to John Sullivan down in Waterford, who I have the utmost respect and time for, because I feel that man was let down badly by a lot of people. So my reason for staying at Waterford when I knew the achievement was getting people on the park was for John Sullivan. And my reason for staying at Athlone when I knew we were going to be beaten every week was for John Hayden and the Athlone people that looked after me and the memories I had from there. That was the motivation. You're asking me how do I motivate myself to get dressed up in my suit, go down, do a team talk in front of a bunch of great youngsters who had no chance of winning most games. My motivation was, if we could improve one of those players or get them to walk away, not with their head between their legs and demoralise as kids and footballers, that was my motivation, that was my achievement. It was nothing to do with me, and it was certainly nothing to do with money, because my final 10 weeks at Watford United, I didn't receive one penny wages. I paid my own petrol. I paid for the fuel for the players. My wife made up lunchbox, as we all know. So, you know, at the end of the day, motivation for me is, I'm very good at this business, as I've proved. I don't need bucket loads of money, as I've proved. I get the right people behind me, and I'll always employ the right person. I don't deal with lead swingers and wasters. I don't deal with them. They don't ever be in my company. So that's what happened there. The Derry situation was another situation where I was manoeuvred out. If you look at the record, I think we had 2 defeats in 13 games. I was manoeuvred out of there. The night John Delaney stood up at the launch of the season in front of about 500 people and made a comment that I said I'd win the league, and he said, I don't think he'd be there long enough. In front of my family, my children, everybody there, Martin O'Neill, the whole lot. If ever I felt I wanted to just throw a table up in the air and grab someone by the throat, that was then. But I kept my counsel. I sat and I talked and looked around at my table. I seen all my beautiful kids, my beautiful, brilliant wife, and I said, do you know what? I may not have a job, but I will still have a beautiful family and a beautiful wife. That's what got me out of that situation. Other than that, he was getting pulled out that stage and my career was over. But there you go. The rest is history.
Look, final question, Roddy. It's been absolutely brilliant to speak to you. I have to say, great catching up with you. But aside from your management career, you were very popular as a pundit on Monday Night Soccer when it was going. You were on radio for many years, obviously still a columnist in a couple of papers as well. This is probably the first time a lot of people have heard your voice in a while. Do you still have the hunger to return to the league in any capacity, let it be coaching or media work in the next while?
Of course, absolutely. I've been in League of Ireland since I was 17, I suppose, all the way through to management, all of 40 odd years in League of Ireland football. You know what I mean? I was dropped out of varsity, that's their prerogative. They dropped me. News Talk dropped me. I exposed a friend on the radio with the right beliefs on somebody. They dropped me. RTE, I was becoming too controversial for sure. You have to look at Joe Brody to realise that.
Yeah.
You know, it's and then you only have to read the book to realise that you have to, you know your place. So look, that's their prerogative. Would I go back walking? Well, I don't understand that. Virgin Media Sport before the lockdown and really enjoyed it in with Bernard in there. I'm not helped for work. I've never rang a radio station, I never rang a television station to ask them for work. They've always approached me. They know where I am. They know my views will never change. They read the book. They know I am the only man within the League of Ireland who stood up to the regime. I suffered the consequences. My family suffered the consequences. My career suffered the consequences.
Roddy, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm glad to hear you're keeping safe and well in these strange times, and great to hear that the family's keeping well too. I want to thank you very, very much for coming on the show and giving us so much time, and it's been wonderful catching up with you.
Thank you, and I hope everybody out there that listens into your show appreciate what's going on, and everyone you keep safe. Wash your hands, keep your distance, and we'll all be back soon, and we'll have one big hell of a party.
Roddy, God bless.
Thank you.
And that is the man himself, Roddy Collins. Once again, a huge thanks to Roddy for joining us on the show. Make sure you check out his column in The Star, where I think he's given this interview a mention as well. So another big thanks to Roddy. Big thanks to his daughter Sinead for setting it up, and all the Collins family for their great help during the interview and getting it out there in the last couple of days. It was great to speak to them all, but that's where we're going to leave it tonight, folks. A reminder that the latest episode of Between the Stripes LOI podcast is available to listen to now. That's Series 4, Episode 14. And John Breyer was back in studio with me this week. Great to have John back, so make sure you give that a listen as well. As ever, on social media, if you want to leave us your reaction to this brilliant episode with the man himself, Roddy Collins, then you can do so at Between Stripes is our Twitter handle, and you'll find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching for Between the Stripes. Our website address is betweenthestripes.ie. Unfortunately, it is down at the moment, still working on getting that fixed, but that is us on Between the Stripes. Roddy.ie. So that's it. I guess all I can say is I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks to Roddy once again. And please do give this a share far and wide, because it's been great catching up with such a character and such a colourful character within the league down the years. And as you heard in the interview, we might see him back yet in a League of Ireland dugout, Roddy Collins. That's it, folks. That's where we're going to leave it off for the night. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And just in the last couple of moments, Dundalk, they have beaten that team from Moldova to go through, Sheriff, on penalty. So Dundalk into the playoff stages for the Europa League. They'll take on Faroe Islands opposition in a home tie. It's a great chance now to reach the group stages, so fingers crossed for them. But a great night for Irish football, and I hope you'll agree that this has been a great interview, and I hope you've all enjoyed it. That's where we'll leave it, and we'll speak to you again next week as Between the Stripes LOI podcast returns again with the latest on all the League of Ireland action and reaction to that big win for Dundalk.